Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight. And Eric Z. Goodnight. God, can we start over? I'm awful. I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, a complete imbecile who can't speak, otherwise known as professional artist and illustration nerd.
We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your hope for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. How you guys doing out there? Eric, how are you doing? You didn't have a stroke in the middle of that intro, did you?
I just want to come clean. I am really drunk. Oh, okay. And I'm doing lots of coke.
Oh, wow. Both.
Yeah.
Well, you do the coke so you can drink more.
Yeah, clearly.
Stay up to drink more.
Stay up and drink more. I mean, this is how addiction works, people.
Yeah. Give you all you comics readers a little lesson on cocaine. Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's a life lesson.
Both Eric and I just do so much of it.
Yes, this rock and roll podcaster lifestyle.
It's all the time.
24/7.
But we got a great show. We got a lot of comic books to talk about. A very interesting week in comics.
You describe it as interesting.
Yeah, interesting. Both good and bad. That's so.
Well, I think that's a fair cop. Yes. I look forward to this discussion.
There's some high highs and low lows. And we'll get there. Nerdboy Book Club, we are reading Top 10 by Alan Moore, Gene Ha, Xander Cannon. A lovely book. A weird one, as Eric described before we started.
It is about as weird as it gets.
Yeah. And I'm talking about Stephen King and checking in. I have no idea what Eric's doing. It's a mystery. But
it is all. I'm always a mystery.
He is. He's an enigma wrapped in a riddle, wrapped in a t-shirt.
Wrapped in pizza.
In pizza.
Mm-hmm. Like Taco Town.
I want some pizza.
You want some Taco Town?
Have you seen the video? I think it's a Clickhole video where they like, it's like a parody of those. It's not Clickhole. It's like, I don't know, it's from Europe somewhere, but those parody of those Photoshop videos where they, you know, have a picture of a model and they're like, show her, like they show her as she really looks,
mm-hmm.
but it goes in reverse as the, whoever's doing the Photoshop makes her to a slice of pizza. She started out as a slice of pizza.
So that's good. Beautiful.
It is beautiful.
That's true beauty.
True beauty. I think with that, it's time for the floppiest part of the week. I think it's time for weekly floppies. Pizza talk. Weekly floppies is part of the show where Eric and I look at the week's books, talk about them, tell you to buy or do not buy them. And we're going to start off with the release of the week. Talked about pretty much everywhere online. Now, if you follow any comics online news sites, you can't avoid it. It is Bitch Planet, number one, by Kelly Sue DeConnick, art by Valentin de Lalonde. Oh my god, talking. Valentin de Leandro, somewhere along those lines. Chris Peter on colors, Clayton Cowles on letters. There's a lot to talk about in this comic.
Well, I think rightly so.
Yeah, rightly so. Not even necessarily the comic itself, but I would say it's been much anticipated, much hyped.
Mm-hmm.
I've been waiting, looking forward to it for a long time. Now it got delayed at Once Upon a Time. I like this comic book a lot. I think most notably, we like Pretty Deadly. I think we made no bones about that. But if we had any criticism about Pretty Deadly, it was its pacing issues.
I think kind of pacing issues, and it was not the most clear storytelling.
Yeah, it wasn't as... this is, I think, more cohesive
mm-hmm.
and very well constructed while yes. being having a lot of depth and giving a lot of substance in one issue, and especially the mm-hmm. first issue.
That's really true. The thing that's... it just does its job too well that it's frustrating. You get to the end right when you feel like it's really starting to heat up. But it's not a bad thing that you're left wanting more. That's exactly what she should set out to do. But it's, I don't know. This is, it's frustrating that this is all there is right now. how many pages is this?
It is 23 pages, which is, including yeah. the cover, it's 22, which is pretty much mm-hmm. standard.
Which is frustrating. I almost feel like they should have gone over an extended first issue, but, you know, it's always a very good thing when a writer can leave you wanting to go on to the next one. That's pretty much exactly what any sort of serialized writing should do.
Yeah. And it, people are, I mean, a lot of, you see a ton of positive press about it. But then there's, of course, some criticism from people about it being, you know, feminist comic, et cetera, et cetera.
My God.
Yeah, I know. Terrible. But
do they let women read comics nowadays? I didn't know that was allowed.
I guess they do. But
my world is shattered, guys. It just occurs to me that maybe there are women listening to this. Maybe we should talk slower. Hello, girls. We're talking about comic books. Jesus Christ. Are we?
Yes, but I mean, I'm just saying that because this comic is not subtle. It is right in your face. It is.
It's a take on grindhouse cinema style. Filmmaking, which is not known for any degree of subtlety.
Precisely.
I think we should probably dissect why it works, but it's, I expected, just knowing Kelly Sue and how excited she was about this book, I expected to like it. I like it more than even I expected to like it. I expected to be like, okay, it's good. No, I'm full on excited about the next issue of this. I hope this is, I don't know, I hope this continues to be one of the best books of 2015.
I don't know, it does a lot of things very well, very artfully. Mm-hmm. Like Eric's mentioned, the grindhouse exploitation kind of mm-hmm. feel, without, while, like, generally women prison cinema is basically just an excuse to see naked women. Like, that's that exploitation films were. For the most
yes.
part.
No, absolutely.
But this makes, like, it stylistically mimics an exploitation film without being exploitative. Like, instead, it turns it mm-hmm. on its, it turns it on its head. It does the opposite. It's hard to describe, I guess. It's hard to dissect it, honestly. It's really incredible.
Mm-hmm. One of the things about, like, sexualization and exploitation is something I've been thinking about lately. I think that one of the problems with it is that it robs people of their humanity, the people that are exploited. This, like you said, this sets out to do the opposite. It sets out to show the humanity of these women in prison. I like how it parallels Orange is the New Black, whether it was intentional or just sort of accidental.
Mm-hmm.
But how, and she said it herself, and it was almost corny that, like, she's setting up basically the Piper Chapman character as the lead character, and then she's immediately murdered.
Yeah.
I swear, like, the mustache guy is, like, directly stolen from Orange is the New Black show. Yeah, it's like, it looks exactly like the actor from Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, there's, Kelly Sue's also, and she's been very self-critical, I mean, about not having any people of color in her comics. And this is the, you know, she's obviously listened to that criticism and trying to respond it in kind.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, often, I think she's often, in the back matter, they talk about that a little bit, but how, I mean, it's often also even a statement on our prison population, how it's disproportionately black.
Yes.
And then you even go further, and it's all women in this all-female prison planet. It's, God, there's so much stuff, so much depth to be explored here. I've read this comic like 3 times already, and I'll probably read it a few more times before the next one comes out, but this has met and exceeded all expectations I had for this comic.
Yeah. Feminist grindhouse kung fu prison drama about a women's prison.
Yeah.
That's a big ball of crazy, and that's the kind of crazy I likes.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I most people, I would imagine, if you haven't bought this already, go buy it. It's great.
I've been recommending it to people that, you know, have even tangential interest in comic books. This is one of the ones you have to be reading.
Yeah, it's very exciting, and it's a very late entry into top issues of the year. Squeaked in, and I think it certainly has to be considered. So double buy, if you guys. That's a super quadruple double buy.
Yeah, it's a pretty. There's no mushiness there.
No, we're confident in that one.
Full on double buy.
Yeah,
it's not a. That was. Yeah.
Mitch Planet number one double buy. Next up, because we both read it, Copperhead number 4.
It seems wrong to skip it.
Yeah, I would have included it if Bitch Planet didn't come out this week. But okay, I'm going by the Comixology credits, written by Jay Farber, art by Scott Godlewski. I'm sorry if there's here. Oh, it's on the. I'm an idiot. It's right there. Colors Ron Reilly, Thomas Maurer on letters.
Where is it?
What page? It's on page 2.
It is on page 2.
Underneath,
right under the title.
Underneath right, the title.
It's right where you think it should be. You're not reading a DC book, Robbie.
I know. I'm trying to look too hard. It's like going in the refrigerator and can't find the ketchup. It's right in front of you. God, I really like this comic.
No, it seems like it's getting even better. Like, I was really worried after issue 1. Like, this feels really good, really strong, you know? Good, people, it feels like it's speaking from character, and everything is just, I don't know. When something just feels well written and well developed, and you can feel the backstory behind it, it feels fleshed out. You know, the parts that you don't see, they feel like they're there. And I hope that I wasn't imagining that, and it's consistently delivered. I don't know. My only criticism is there's not enough of it, and it's painful. Why are there so many good comics, Robbie?
I don't know. I'm quite happy. I'm not going to be too upset about too many good comics, even though it does take them a long. That's the nature. We have to be patient.
I'm super pissed about this.
But yeah, this is. Gosh, this comic is really, really good. It's like Eric said, it feels like a real living universe there.
Yeah.
It feels cohesive, and the art is very consistently great. The story is really compelling. All the characters are really interesting, and it's very slowly building. It knows how to ratchet up tension very slowly but very I can't think of words. It does it really well. How about that? It does it very well.
Does it the gooderest?
does it the gooderest? But like every even supporting character stays interesting, and it, you know, it is crafting a very well-rounded story. I laughed my ass off in that scene with the tycoon guy calling back.
That really was delightful.
Calling back to her old boss.
Yes, that was perfectly artfully worded there.
Does your town have a fat bastard like that? Maybe you could frame her for his murder.
Yes.
So good.
That's, yeah, that's good times.
No, but this is a great comic. It's like space western is like such a kind of tired, like pitch thing. Like, oh, it's a space western. Oh, okay. But this is really more than that. Even though it like at first glance, that's what it is. It is that, but it surpasses that kind of tropey idea. I'm a buy.
I'm a buy too. Where do you think they're going to go with this? Do you think that it's going to be like Case Files, or it's going to be like a very large overarching story?
I don't know. And that's kind of what's also interesting about it. Like,
which do you think you'd prefer?
I think it can't. I think she has to stay on the planet.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. I think there probably will be some sort of, probably with the tycoon, I imagine, some sort of greater overarching that's going to be the main villain of this.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine they will mingle, you know, the, you know, small town crime thing. I imagine it will feel like Justified to a certain extent, if you've ever watched that.
I have not.
But that it's kind of a mix, I would say. I would say they don't do either. They kind of use the small case files to offset some greater mystery thing. I imagine involving that tycoon guy. Because he does seem to be setting up as a longer term antagonist.
I think someone's going to steal his bucket of chicken.
It's possible.
It's very probable. I'm thinking about it right now.
You're getting me hungry.
I know.
We do. We have chicken for dinner too. So.
Me too.
Why? Go. So that's a double buy, Copperhead number 4. It's as good as fried chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next up, we're going to DC. Batgirl number 37. Written by Cameron Stewart and Brendan Fletcher. Babs Tarr on art. Cameron Stewart doing breakdowns. Maris Wicks on colors. Jerry K. Fletcher doing the letters. Have you heard anything about this? Just kind of broke recently about the creative team apologizing over some outrage about the trans character in it. Dagger type.
He's not even trans as much as he's a drag queen.
I don't know. I'm not going to try and parse out all that. I'm just stating that they've apologized for what is a perceived slight against stereotypical trans identity issues. Mainly Batgirl's reaction when she finds out that it's a guy impersonating her, not a lady.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's been some uproar, of course, on the internet. And then uproar about the uproar. And then an apology, and then an uproar about the apology.
Oh my god.
So
this is
this is still a good comic.
Yeah, it is. I think it's I feel like it holds together better than the last one. It is beautiful. Babs is almost like, it's unreal how perfect she is for this. But it I don't know what you're describing is really troubling to me. And I think that it's indicative of what just too many people on the left. I don't know. Like it. It seems like a little bit much.
There's nothing.
It's explain to me what this outrage is over.
Well, from what I have not delved deep into this, I was just, it came up on CBR. I was not aware until I saw an article on CBR about it, which linked to an article, someone who had written extensively about why they are upset about it. Mm-hmm. I think the core of it is that Batgirl in Gail Simone's run of this, which is, you know, just before this whole team took over, she had, you know, become friends with a trans character. I think her roommate was a trans character. And now, and there's a certain, let's see, page 15, it's revealed that it's this avant-garde artist type who's impersonating her, and he's a male, I'm not going to try and, she goes, dagger type question mark, but you're, and then he shoots a gun at her. And that kind of, her being aware that, you know, trans people exist and blah, 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 blah. I don't think that this creative team is a fairly progressive team.
Yeah.
I don't think they intended any kind of.
And I think that's sort of what I was driving at, is that people just expect people to be held to such a high standard that they'll just really hold people to the fire for a perceived slight like this. And I don't know. This team is going to be terrified to say or do something wrong at this point. That's just, I don't know. That's a frustrating position to be left in. Like, oh, is our work, you know, nice and inclusive enough, instead of just worrying about telling the kind of story that they want to tell. And they're going to feel like they have to respond to that. And obviously they've already issued an apology. I mean, that being said, like it is like a thing that, like, there are plenty of feminists that despise trans women and don't recognize them. They're just like, well, those are just men and I hate men or something. I don't know. But it's even got a term, trans exclusionary radical feminist, TERFs. And I guess that is why, like, there's this sort of hypersensitivity. I mean, I feel like I've been talking a long time. Is there even any indication that this guy is any kind of transsexual? He's just a transvestite.
I don't know. To answer
all of my questions at once?
No, the last one in particular about I don't think they delve into this character, and I think if I was going to pick at it, I would say that's the only thing I could see, is that you don't really get much about this character. You just kind of get and the fact that he's kind of a lunatic, like, you know, you paint this, obviously, you know, I don't know what kind of, how gendered he is or how, you know, anything like that, but you paint him as this crazy person who's, like, you know, shooting into a, I mean, he's like, now he doesn't have a full arc. He has, like, it's a very simple kind of stereotypical painting of, like, a lunatic who's impersonating Batgirl, and then she, you know, takes him out, and that's that.
Well, it doesn't,
I don't know. I still like this comic. I think it's really good, and the art, like you said, is amazing.
No, it's delightful.
I'm not going to stop buying this comic for it. I didn't really think about it even until I saw the uproar online.
Well, you know why you like it is because you're the patriarchy.
Down with patriarchy.
No, you're the patriarchy.
Oh.
So that's why you like this.
Oh, crap. I don't know what to do now.
Yep, it's true.
I don't know. I am a buy on Batgirl number 37. It deserves your attention.
This book. It's the gooderest.
And next up, I'm very interested to see what you say about this, Eric. I know I have my thoughts about it. This is news. Before you say anything, let me lay it out for you. New Suicide Squad number 5, written by Sean Ryan, breakdowns by Tom Derenick, Rob Hunter on art, Blonde doing colors, Dave Sharp on letters. We read the first issue of this, and we were not fans. Then it was pointed out to me, and I brought it to Eric's attention. We talked about it briefly on the podcast that the first issue in this whole kind of the idea around this book is that it's kind of parodying DC editorial, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, well, let's read it again and check it out. Maybe with that lens, it'll be more interesting. And honestly, I can't get beyond the fact that this is some of the worst comic superhero art I've ever seen.
Yeah, isn't it though?
It's terrible.
I'm glad I'm not the only one noticing this. It's this is like the book that they let like their, you know, like their 17-year-old cousin draw. It's awful.
Well,
it's embarrassingly bad.
Yeah, I'm gonna lay this. I looked up Rob, the artist, Rob Hunter. I looked him up online.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done work before, and generally, he kind of just looks like DC House style. Kind of like a Rob Lee, not Rob Lee. I did a Rob Liefeld, Jim Lee.
That's,
hybrid
hey,
there.
Fine.
Yeah, Jim.
Just mash them together.
Rob, a Jim Lee kind of, acolyte, which DC, you know, has a lot of.
Yeah.
And, he was not solicited for this book. When this book was initially solicited, it was an entirely different art team, which tells me that they went to him at the last second, we're not going to get this done in time,
yep.
Do this, and then push it out. And that is at the feet of DC editorial.
Yep.
Which, how could you be an editor at DC? And they have, you know, they have the no delay policy. How can you look at this book and say, oh, this is ready? When the art is god awful. Obviously rushed. God, the pages of who is this? Was it?
I think it starts. I just want to point out that it starts on page one.
Yeah,
with these racist caricatures of Chinese people that were not drawn from reference, but rather from the rough description of some Vietnam War veteran. Uncle Jeb, can you tell me what Chinese people look like?
Oh, God.
Yes, now I'm going to draw them for this professional comic book. This is the fucking worst. If we're going to be outraged and hold fucking Babstar and the team behind Batgirl for not making their incredibly inclusive, wonderful comic not inclusive and wonderful enough, how about we call this fucking dog shit out for being dog shit racist? That fucking makes me angry.
This comic is, as I was reading it the other day, I'm like, I was just like, every page, I'm like, wow, this is bad. I'm like, oh my God, this is terrible. It's just the pages with, Deadshot recovering in the, trying to, God, like, look at the wheelchair wheel.
Mm-hmm.
On page eight, like, the...
How it's going a completely different direction.
the faces are just totally different from page to page.
Yeah.
Like, I don't... It's hard for me to, like, even kind of dissect what's happening. Because mm-hmm. the art is so awful. How could DC let this go out the door? This is not an independent comic book. There are levels of editors that have to look at this at every single step. Oh my God. If this is my first issue of this, I'm going to go, I can't read this book. Well, I'm never going to buy this again.
The thing that terrifies me, Robbie, is that there's probably a reader out here who this is completely hitting the mark for.
But the art is so, I mean,
I would say the same thing about Liefeld.
That's true.
And there are a lot of people that love Liefeld. And I have softened on Liefeld. Liefeld is better than this. I can't even explain why Liefeld's better, because it's certainly not for any technical real reasons. Jesus Christ, ninja fucking man bat.
And that sounds like the stupid idea that, a dumb idea that I could get behind, if it actually looked alright, but, and that's probably the best looking page in this entire comic.
It actually is. Although, like, he's stabbing this guy with a sword and it's not coming out the back of the guy.
Yeah, where is that
sword? Well, like, it's a huge sword and it's just not, he's stabbing it like it's supposed to go through him, and then it just ends. So it's got a handle that three of his giant man-bat hands can fit on, and a blade that is 6 inches long. I mean, I am not a Japanese swordsmith, but I don't think that is, I don't think that's how they're made.
No, this, and I don't, this, I don't buy this book. Dear God, this is terrible. This, it's doing a disservice to everyone involved with this by them allowing this to be put out. Like, I'm fairly confident this isn't this guy's best art he could do.
Well, if he did this in like a day and a half, I understand.
Yeah, that is what I perceive as the situation.
Yeah.
Where like the team that was solicited for this didn't get enough of it done or even started or said, "Oh, yeah, we're not going to be able to," and then they went, grab somebody.
If they came to him and they're like, "You have 10 days to finish this book." And then he had to do it. I mean, Christ. It's just an embarrassment.
Yeah. Double Do Not Buy on New Suicide Number Suicide Squad number 5.
Yeah.
It makes why should I buy this book ever again? I came back to this to give it a shot. And then this.
Well, how else would we know about these incredibly racist drawings?
It's true.
I wonder what the Chinese translation of "I don't want us to be the ones that screw it all up now." I wonder what that is. I wonder if they really thought about this. I mean, does that reflect Chinese sentence structure?
I don't know. I don't know. Okay. Moving on to Marvel at Thor number 3. You've been reading this all along. Written by Jason Aaron, art by Russell Dodderman, colors by Matthew Wilson, Joe Sabino doing letters. I still thoroughly enjoy this book.
I want to live in Jason Aaron's beard. This was better than the last one. Better than the first one. We're starting to get to see a little bit of the character of this new Thor. And I'm starting to full on love this book. I don't know. Jason Aaron is winning me over. I like this book a lot.
No, it's really good. The art is super colorful, super dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
There's several, like, you get all these characters kind of interweaving all together. With the Dario Aggers, the Minotaur guy versus mm-hmm. with the Frost Giants and Malekith and this and Thor and then you know it's just really fun, really exciting action mixed with, like you said, really a kind of starting to see a display of mm-hmm. her character, which is going to be really what carries this book past the kind of initial like who is she and what's happened, you know, kind of that thing. Like, her character is what's going to be carrying this book after all that kind of drops off. And like you said, it's not that initial kind of promise that the first couple issues have shown. It is not backing off from that. It is kind of delving deeper into that. Yeah. It's really good.
I'm kind of getting sick of these Frost Giants, though.
Well, I think they're all dead now.
I hope so. I mean, the book has just been too blue. Between Malekith and all these Frost Giants. Let me have some different colors.
I think they're all dead.
I hope so.
They all got killed. And sucked
sons
down
of,
and then the
sons
got
of
crushed.
Bitches.
Well, there might be more Frost Giants. Who knows?
And Thor and his destroyer arm and his goat. Yeah.
Teeth Gnasher and what's the other one?
Is that really the...
One of them is Tooth or Teeth Gnasher, and the other one is... Oh, I can't remember it.
Goticus Maximus?
No, it's just as obnoxious as Teeth Gnasher, but it's not Goticus Maximus. I'm a very solid buy on this book and this series. It's great.
Yeah. No, it is continues to be the gooderest. Everything's the gooderest. Everything. Except Suicide Squad.
Yeah, exactly. Dear God. So double bye, Thor number 3. Lastly, another, our second number one issue. Third number, let's see, second number one issue. I can't talk and or count. Second number one issue of the week. Spider-Man and the X-Men, number one. Written by Elliot Callan, Marco Faya on art. Not sure if that's a...
Faya? I don't know.
Maybe. Ian Herring Ian Herring on colors, and Clayton Cowles doing the letters. This is the new Wolverine and the X-Men book. This is Spider-Man and the X-Men.
Spider-Man goes to detention.
Yeah. I don't know why... I don't understand why Storm doesn't like Spider-Man. But...
Storm... I don't know. I think it's easy to make Storm grumpy.
I guess that's true. It's funny. Is kind of that regal, mm-hmm. kind of that, yeah. But this is basically Spider-Man, like, substitutes teacher Spider-Man in the X-Men school, Jean Grey school, or whatever the hell they're calling it nowadays. Xavier school or Jean Grey school? I can't remember. Say. It's a Jean Grey school now.
It's the Jean Grey school.
The Cyclops side is the Xavier school. I forget.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm back and forth on them. But
should read all new X-Men.
I did, but reading Uncanny at the same time.
You're not allowed to read more than one comic at once.
It's hard. but this is a very kind of silly, fun, kind of flippant comic book, and I enjoyed it. It was fun.
In other words, Spider-Man is in it.
Yeah, Spider-Man's in it, and it's doing
it's silly,
Spider-Man,
fun, and flippant. Yes,
he's doing what a spider does.
Spiders tell jokes all the time.
All the time.
It's one of the reasons that people find them so endearing.
Exactly. But they go on a field trip, they fight Stegron and Sauron. Your favorite.
Naturally.
Your favorite dinosaur guys.
Sauron is, he's a little smaller than he was when he was in the Lord of the Rings.
Go jump in the garbage can. That's the worst.
This is not the first time you told me to jump in the garbage can. He won't even make eye contact now. This is good.
That's the worst. But yeah, it's a fun, silly kind of Spider-Man book with a lot of the ex students. It's kind of Spider-Man is kind of the prototype for all these guys. So having them interact is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, bye, well, I'm a bye.
He doesn't seem to be a part of this X-Men world too much. They kind of seem to be addressing that.
Yes.
About how it feels a little incongruous. You just ran out there and said it's a bye. Does that mean you're ready to move on?
No. I'm just saying I'm making my stance known.
No, it's absolutely the book you should buy. I like how it looks like an animated series. Like it looks like it's making a, like with the color choices and sort of the boldness of the heavy lines.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's trying to be like a Saturday morning cartoon.
It feels like that.
Mm-hmm. High jinxy.
Yeah, it does. And I think that that's what this book should be, and it certainly is. It's not a dark, grim look at Peter Parker and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's Spider-Man being Spider-Man. You don't really see Peter Parker at all in this comic. It's all, you know, the Spider-Man.
I think this is a good one for the wee ones.
Yeah, it is. It does definitely is a comic that you could say, you know, if a young child would want to read.
A great all ages book, or at least it appears to be.
Yeah, it is. It has like bold declarative statements without being.
Yeah, I think that's a tough. It does. I don't know.
It captures kind of that Stan Lee, like, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba kind of feeling without being, like, super cheesy and, like, groan-inducing. It's, mm-hmm. it, it's, It feels natural.
You don't want to tell it to jump in the garbage can.
No, I do not want to tell it to jump in the garbage can.
Oh, buy this book.
Yeah.
Everybody.
It's great. It's fun. It's going to be a kind of a fun adventure-y. The Wolverine and the X-Men was always like the lightest of the X books. And this is with Spider-Man feels at home in this.
Mm-hmm.
So double buy Spider-Man and the X-Men number one.
Spider-Man. Hey. You know what else I read?
What else did you read?
Southern Bastards came out.
Yeah. Is it still amazing?
Yes.
Okay.
Good God. I often think about, I don't know. I have a lot of half-formed thoughts that I want to say about this. It's straight up incredible.
Well, we can do
Coach Boss. No, we'll have to. Yeah. Coach Boss is such a scum fuck. And you actually have a lot of empathy for him in this book, but I don't know the things it's saying. This book speaks to me. It's incredible.
I'm trade waiting on it.
I can't.
You can't do it?
I can't.
Can't? Okay. I understand.
I'm going to read every one of these as they come out.
And then buy the trades too?
Yes, probably.
And then buy the hardcover collections of the trades?
And then go live in Jason Aaron's beard.
Yeah, buy the omnibus edition of those hardcovers.
Well, that's where I have to keep them, in his beard. Pay rent there.
How much is rent in Jason Aaron's beard?
It's gone up. I mean, you know, the neighborhood's being gentrified.
Oh. I read Wild's End, number four.
I read the first couple pages while I was talking to you. I wish I had read it, because it looks delightful.
It still doesn't feel like this comic book is ending in 2 issues.
I know.
I'm interested, like, it does definitely have a big, like, boom moment at the end, but I still don't know how they're gonna wrap it up, unless, like, their last issue was, like, a big deluxe double size something or other. Like, I'm curious to see how it goes.
Was it 2 issues? I thought this was an 8 issue. 6. What am I thinking of that's 8 issues?
Axis is 9.
I don't think of Axis.
I try not to.
Yeah.
Except when I go to the comic book store and see all of the tie-ins all at once.
All the Axis tie-ins.
No, there's only 2 more issues of this. It seems strange to me, but it's still good. I still really enjoy it. It's a very fun comic to, like, read and be in. Like, this is a fun world. But it's kind of sad that it's ending in 2 issues. I wish it could go on longer. Hopefully it's not short-shrifted by that.
Truly, truly.
But, like I said, a lot of comic books to talk about. I think we did a good job. Give ourselves a pat on the back.
Did the gooderest job.
Gooderest job. With that, I think it's time for the Floppy's part of the week to be over. Till next week, at least. Time for checking in. Man, that's a good noise.
It was. Yes.
Yeah. We double buy on the noise.
Mm-hmm.
Checking is part of the show where Eric and I talk about what we've been up to during the week. Eric, what have you been up to during the week? It's a mystery.
Oh, man.
What is it?
I shouldn't let you talk.
You shouldn't let
me talk. I don't do things during the week. You know
you do
this.
Too. Don't lie to
I
me.
Do not.
You do.
I don't.
You do. You go to work. You eat, like, you make yourself bacon. You didn't do anything, Eric. Come on.
There is there's a really rad space that's opened up in Tampa called Workspace that I've been enjoying going to. It's in Seminole Heights, right beside the Welcome to Seminole Heights sign, which I think is pretty funny. I wonder if they even put it up. I have no idea. But the workshop is it is just a big workspace for this guy where he builds furniture on commission. And he's opened the whole front space of the shop as a small gallery. And I've seen two shows there. The closing of one show where an artist named Basque, a local Tampa artist named Basque, had a show. And just recently where Amos Kennedy was showing off his letterpress prints last night. And it was just back to back, two really good shows. It's a really good space, a really good vibe. The kind of art that I like to see right here in the area. So it was a great experience. I will have to show it to you sometime when you're in town.
It sounds like fun.
Yeah, it was great. There was the gallery opening there, and there was supposed to be some kind of after party at the Mermaid Tavern. I don't know. I ate a salad and then left. as I am wont to do.
Eat a salad and leave?
Yeah, that sounds like me. I kind of do want to talk about how fucking crazy Linux is, but I feel like it's self-indulgent to talk about it.
Well, touch on it. Give it to 2 minutes.
All right, I'll be as brief as possible, because I was working on my server and I have set up a program which is basically like remote desktop, but it's called VNC. At least the client I'm using is VNC, but I mean it's all basically the same thing. It's remote desktop, to where I'm logging in to a client or to a server on the server. To, you know, manage it. And I was trying to make some changes to the network, and obviously connecting to it over the network and changing things on the network, I knew that the client was going to fail. But what I did not realize is these changes were going to, just completely lock me out forever, which I thought it had. But then like a couple hours later, I had set some things in place to revert after a couple of hours just to, you know, cause I wanted to be able to fix the damn thing. So I logged in on my phone and it got me in. But when I went back to the PC, the Windows machine that I was on, I was still locked out. So I was locked out for 24 hours. Changed all the settings back with other machines, which could log in. Every machine could log in, except for the Windows PC. Are you understanding what I'm saying?
Yes.
Every machine could log in except the Windows machine. My phone could log in. My laptop could log in. I even rebooted the Windows machine into a Linux partition to use Linux to log in. Could not log in on that machine in Linux. This machine was locked out, and it was not just one single program or the program that I was using. It was everything. All network traffic from and to this machine to this other machine was not happening. Every other machine could do all these things. There was no solution online. I posted in several forums. Some of them were just like, yeah, you're posting in the wrong place. That was about the only response I got. And then, you know, after about 24 hours and about 4 reboots, it's back to normal. Inexplicably.
You tell me these stories. Your Linux escapades.
Well, what I'm trying to say is I've installed a mutant healing factor on my server.
Okay, good.
The package is called Logan. You can get it. You sudo apt-get Logan. And it's got all these libraries that it needs, you know. It installs adamantium, all this horse shit. Just do not drown your computer or pour lots of metal on it. Or it'll die.
Okay, I got it. I won't do those things on my... I'm never, ever going to try and install Linux, so...
You're not going to install Logan?
Never. Sorry.
You probably have a different package manager. What did you do, Robbie?
I listened.
What did you and your many cats do?
They didn't do anything with me except be cats. I listened to an audiobook.
Ooh.
Revival by Stephen King, his newest. This is the best thing I, quote unquote, read, from him in a long while, actually. I don't want to be that person that says, oh, he's gotten soft in his old age, but last few books have been, I don't know, feels like he's gotten a little soft in his old age, quote unquote, old age, but I mean, it's crazy how much he's writing. I think this is his third book in 12 months or something. It's ridiculous.
That's pretty consistent with all of the other shit that he's written a million things.
Yeah, but I mean, it's even crazier now. Like, it's just pumping them out. Novel after novel after novel. And this is...
I wonder how many millions of words he's published.
A lot. He's written
a lot millions.
Yeah, a lot millions. That's the number. But it's a very interesting book. It like a lot of his stuff recently, it seems like he's kind of looking back at his like his parts of his life that he was, you know, had addiction issues to drugs and alcohol, and like exploring them in really interesting ways. This is about a guy who has a childhood relationship with a preacher in his town in Maine. And this preacher is obsessed with electricity and the powers of electricity and even a secret electricity. And it feels like almost like Stephen King writing a Ra's al Ghul story in a certain way. Like, to relate it back to comics. There's no Batman, but it feels very much like the main antagonist is kind of like a Dr. Frankenstein, a Ra's al Ghul, a mad scientist, but, you know, it also deals a lot with faith and even ties back to H.P. Lovecraft mythology in a certain way. But this book is a lot darker than a lot of his more recent stuff. And I say that and that's a great compliment, because a lot of his stuff, it feels like he's pulled punches. In this, he is not. I would definitely recommend this to anyone. Anyone who likes horror, but it's very good. And the audiobook's very good too. It's a really good performance by the narrator, by the voice actor.
Any voice actor that you recognize, or
just random, I forget his
random, not, random talky guy.
I think he does all this. Because I listened to the last one too. I think it's the same. I could tell you in a second. David Morse. I think he's an actor as well. The name sounds very familiar, but he did a great job. He did a really good job on the different vocal inflections and stuff like that. Oh, there was some of that little, like, hey, I'm a sexy woman, but I'm really a dude.
Yeah, it's always uncomfortable.
But not too much of it, luckily. Other thing, so definitely recommend that. Other thing I want to touch on is the Star Wars #1 coming out next year from Marvel. Their first Star Wars comic in a long, long time, now that Disney has reacquired the rights to Star Wars. It's already pre-orders have already gone over 1 million sales, which hasn't been done since Batman #500, which was the last issue of Nightfall.
That's a long time ago.
Yes, exactly. So I think it's interesting. I don't know if that means any kind of greater growth for the comics industry, or is it just a kind of a combination of, look at Star Wars, you know, it's an all-star team. You're getting kind of widespread appeal to non-comics fans.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure they feel like it's probably going to bring people into the comic book store that are, you know, that I'm sure it's fairly timely with the movie.
I think this is starring all the people from the original trilogy.
I'm not sure when it's.
I think it's set in between certain things. I don't know.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying the release date, similar time with the movie.
Earlier before that. And then the movie's not coming out till when? Like summer or something? January 14th. So next year, early next year.
I was going to say, I didn't know how far in advance they did those pre-orders.
3 months.
But it seems like the movie is got to be further away than that. But I guess just on the heels of all the...
Just the teaser trailer, it was crazy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I guess that's what's feeding it, because there have been... It's not like this is the first Star Wars comic that's ever happened.
No, the Dark Horse has been publishing them forever.
I have seen many. I've owned several old ones from the 90s, maybe even the 80s. I don't know. They don't really work for me.
Well, this is... The teams on them are certainly good. Written by... This book is written by Jason Aaron. So, artwork by John Cassaday.
Hmm.
Certainly, two good comics creators. So, it takes place, let's see, after 4 and between, after 4 and before 5. So, between one of the original trilogy, between the first and second movies. But I think that's really interesting that it's cross that threshold. If it means anything, and I don't know if it necessarily does, but it's nice to see those numbers returning, even if it's a one-time deal.
Mm-hmm.
Let me try to think of a segue.
Checking in away.
Yes.
Checking in over.
Yeah, with that.
It's over.
We're done with all the talking about Linux and Star Wars and Stephen King and art.
God damn it, we're nerds.
God. Yeah. And mentioning that, it's time for Nerd Boy Book Club. Nerd Boy Book Club is part of the show when Eric and I assign a longer collected work, analyze it more, give it a little more depth and exploration, like you would in a book club. This week we are doing Top 10 by Alan Moore, Gene Ha, Xander Cannon. The first 12 issues, volume 1 and 2. Smack saying, what was the other one? There's one other one you said?
There are 3 other books that I have.
What are they?
There's other books as well that have been written.
Okay.
But the 2 others that have been written about these characters in this world that I think are noteworthy are Smacks by, I think it's Alan Moore and Xander Cannon without Gene Ha, and it looks very different. It is Xander Cannon. And Top 10, The 49ers, which I think that's Alan Moore and Gene Ha without Xander Cannon. It is very good as well. It is about Captain Traynor during World War II, or sort of the tail end of World War II.
Okay.
The founding of Neapolis.
Yeah.
The founding of Neapolis.
Neapolis. This book is a weird one. As Eric admitted, there's a lot of weird, I don't know if it's weird, but there's a lot of weird stuff in it.
It is both.
Yeah.
It is a weird book with lots of weird stuff in it.
It is basically.
It is also a good book with lots of good stuff in it.
Yeah, it's very good. I am fresh to this. I have not read this before. It's been on my, long list of 2 reads. Eric had read this before. It is a police force in a world where everyone has superpowers.
Yes, practically everyone has some degree of superhuman, and it's largely about the effects on society of what that means. When everyone is superpowered, they have different STDs. They have an STD that's caused by all of this crazy, whacked out, superpowered DNA interacting with each other that causes horrifying mutations.
Yeah.
Top 10 Beyond the Farthest Precinct actually takes that into consideration. part of the story is about that. And I don't know if it's as good as any of these other ones, but, you know, it's interesting at least. I was very hungry for top 10 after I read the first two. And I don't know, tried to devour as many things as I could. This was relatively soon after these came out, honestly. This was maybe 2005 and 6, and I know these are set in 1999.
Yeah.
I think that's probably when he was writing them.
Yeah, and it to say that everyone in this world has superpowers, it's not even, I don't think that does it justice, because Alan Moore does not even try and eliminate it to, like, let's have, like, dudes that look weird. There's also, like, Godzilla monsters, and, like, yeah, robots that, you know, are sentient, and dogs that are people. Dogs in people suits that are, like, super smart, and Optimus Prime shows up in the end.
Oh, God, I love Joe Pye.
I know. I'm like, oh, man, he's only in two issues. Why isn't he in more?
Well, that's one of the reasons that I read Beyond the Farthest Precinct is that it's got more Joe Pye. But that's, I don't know. It's interesting because the AIs are basically an analog for black people.
And yeah, they're called clickers.
Yes, I love how horrible that sounds. Like, it's so artful that he makes up something that sounds so damn hateful. I would have never thought of, I don't know, out of this context, it just, oh, it's a clicker. That's what my grandmother called the remote control.
Yeah, exactly.
And not what my grandmother uses a racial slur against robots. Oh, my God, this book is, it's all kinds of amazing.
Yeah, there's, I don't even know where to start. There is a lot of story.
Why don't you just sort of encapsulate, first book one and then book two, because a lot happens. It's, it manages to tell an awful lot of story.
Yeah, it's, we kind of are introduced through Robin Slinger, who's a new cop on the force.
I despise Robin Slinger.
Really? You don't like her?
I think it's mostly her terrible costume. I think that's 99% of it is her terrible costume, because it's not like she's a bad character. She's intentionally flat so we can identify, and she's sort of our point of entry, and those characters are typically really flat. But she's interesting enough, and like the whole subplot with her and her father is, I think, very endearing. But God, that costume.
Yeah.
There are some aspects of this book that are just so painfully 90s, and she is one of them.
Yeah. That's, I would say, even the most she uses toys.
Yes.
Her father, and she has her costume is like a black shirt that says Toy Box on it.
Yeah.
Basically.
They look, it's like handwritten in like fucking lipstick or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Puffy paint.
For the most of this, even, I mean, the stories kind of span over both volumes to a certain extent. I would say the main plot of the first arc is mainly that there's a killer, someone's killing prostitutes, decapitating them.
Yes.
And they're trying to figure out
the Libra killer.
Yeah, they're trying to figure out who it is and you know why and all that. But then. And then there's also a kind of a conspiracy kind of mystery also going on in the background about, you know, a drug deal gone awry, and they're trying to figure out why a certain drug dealer has been killed and all that, which pays off later in the second arc, but it's introduced in the first and even connects sort of to, I mean, there's even a third plot that kind of works only in the last couple issues that involves all these characters. Well, even the one, both of the ones involved in both of those stories. like Eric said, there's a lot, and there's a lot of other sub, like little tight, like little stories in between all that. Like the story of that blimp guy who they suspect is, a killer until they just find out he just goes to a lot of prostitutes, and then he has that, the AIDS.
Yes, it's called Storms.
Yeah, it's basically superhero AIDS, but mutates you into, you know, a monster.
Mm-hmm. If you're lucky.
If you're, I like that there's a, the percentage, you could theoretically ascend into godhood.
Yeah. But,
which like there's also gods in this comic.
And that was sort of the only outlier issue. Is the god issue where it shows Odin and Baldur and Thor and Freya getting where Baldur was killed in a bar. It was a pretty ridiculous issue that they're investigating the murder of Baldur.
Who we find out, it's just killed every day. It's just an endless cycle like Ragnarok is. Which I do want to talk about. There is some criticism of superhero comics in here,
mm-hmm.
and that certainly is part of it, that issue in particular. That, I would say that issue and that kind of scene is half of it, and the other half is probably the mice, the super mice and the cats and the...
How hard did you squee when that happened? How much did you like Galactus Cat?
I was about to say Galactus Cat is pretty awesome.
I remembered when I was reading through it and the Ex-Verminator showed up, and I was like, "Oh my god, Robbie's gonna like love this."
I really, the super cats and the super mice, and they're having this battle. But And then there's a crisis on. And
yeah, they have a big crisis event
inside. The Exterminator. It doesn't get paid because.
And then they retcon it.
they retcon the extermination.
They retcon it. Oh, it's effing beautiful.
But Alan Moore. I would, you know, none of it matters. I think that's his. I think that's what comes away with it. It feels like he's critiquing regular superhero comics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nothing, none of that stuff matters. Nothing stays. Nothing is permanent. That, and you know, that with the God's Bar stuff, that I think is also the kind of the same deal. Like, why are we bothering investigating this when it happens every day?
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly feels like a very on-point critique of, like, this is why I got away from superhero comics, because I don't want to write them, I'm not interested in them anymore. But yet, at the same time, he does this comic book where everyone has powers. Do you think that's a little bit of having your cake and eating it, too?
I think that he's obviously got a lot of love for the genre and these kind of stories, but... You know, it's a fair cop, as they say, to call things out.
Pun intended.
Well, yeah. Do I need to go reside in the garbage can again?
No, that was good. I like that.
You didn't. That's all fine. But yes, I don't know. I feel like it's fair enough to call it out, and I think I've complained similarly about comic book continuity in non-creator owned, you know, mainstream comic books, which is what this feels like a beef about. I had never thought about that the whole God story really is sort of an on point, veiled criticism of that. You know, why even pay attention to it? I mean, the other stuff was, you know, obvious.
Yes.
You can, I mean, it, as obvious as a space cat.
Yes, this Galactus Cat and all the other superheroes. Although, I mean, but then he makes the Superman figure a pedophile,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Mm-hmm.
Eh. I don't know.
What about?
I don't. Just seems a little bit too harsh to be that you make all the Golden Age superheroes are all pedophiles and liars. I don't know. I think that Alan Moore's opinions of superhero comics are well overblown. He probably doesn't really even think about them that much.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably gets asked about it all the time. Mm-hmm. So he has to routinely state just, hey, I don't really like them. I don't really read them. It's hard to, like, not engage him on the subject when he writes a comic like this where it's, I don't know, very kind of like...
It's one thing transparent. To dislike... Right. It's one thing to dislike a company and their handling of these properties over, you know, 50 or 60 years. And to say he dislikes the genre of super, because it's clearly something that he read a lot when he was young. Mm-hmm. It's clearly something that he writes, you know, whether you would call, I'm not too familiar with Promethea, but I am familiar with Tom Strong. And I feel like you could call Tom Strong a superhero book, even though it's a little bit more of that, Savage, pulpy sort of vein.
Well, I mean, that's where Fantastic Four came from. Mm-hmm. And it's not much
clearly,
different.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not terribly different. It's just sort of part of the, you know, the collective bunch of nonsense that is Alan Moore. I don't think you can separate the two. It's just fundamental to who he is. He can talk shit about Marvel or, mostly DC. You know, as we are even want to, but I don't know. I would be completely disinterested had I, you know, well, I will say if I had the strong feelings about how my work was treated. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know if it's exactly the way that he paints it. I don't know if the case is exactly how he says it.
Having gotten that out of the way, kind of the fact that it's undeniable, like that kind of subtext is here.
Mm.
The nuance and depth he's given to quite a large cast of characters is very impressive. Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's a reason everyone thinks Alan Moore is a good writer, because like it's pretty remarkable that you feel like you know every single one of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, we've already mentioned like the attachment. I've already gotten to Joe Pye, and he was only in the comic for like two or three issues.
It's like masterful that he takes all of your expectations of this character. And I think even the way he's drawn sort of reinforces those expectations. And then he just so elegantly turns them on his head that Joe is a character that just, it's like a delightful, like, just sort of always knows the correct, most human way to act in the situation, and he's an effing robot. And that's delightful and fascinating. I forgot how much I love Joe Pye. God, he's great.
I was like, kind of like sitting down while breakfast was cooking this morning, I'm reading those Joe Pye issues, I'm like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, and it ended, I'm like, oh no!
Joe!
Joke! I need more Joe!
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how, like, artfully done it is, how to analyze. Like you said, it is a not that subtle, you know, statement on race relations.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, making him instantly, like, such a likable and interesting character. In just two issues, and even at the same time juggling so many characters.
There's so many characters, and I can say that there's really the only character that is not incredibly likable is Robin Slinger,
who is the perspective one, the one that we see. But it, I mean, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, like, I think that I feel like she's more likable after Smacks, but Smacks it's not as good, but it explores the world. It's worth reading. And yeah. I have not reread it. But I will probably do that as soon as I hang up on you.
I do quite like Smacks as a character.
He's a very cool character, so you should read the book so you can understand a little bit more about who and what he is and see him interact with Robin a little bit more. And I identify with him, you know, the big grumpy guy that's just sort of ashamed of where he's from. I can relate to that.
But I don't know. I think, like you said about Joe Pye, about him, everything we expect after just seeing him, everything is kind of turned on its head.
Mm.
We get kind of like King Peacock, the Satan worshiper.
Yes.
Where this God, him going to the Roman.
Oh Lord. Yeah. And I thought that was really interesting. That was one of the things that struck me just way more jarring than I remembered is just how horrible their world was. That, like, they have slaves.
Yeah.
In their, apparently the greatest society in multiple universes. And they have slavery. And they say to King Peacock, oh, they don't say black. They call them Nubian.
Which, yeah, and they're like, I'm like, at first they're like saying newbie. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah,
I'm like,
no,
oh my God. Nubian.
Yeah.
That's awful.
I don't think it's that awful.
Well, no, but I mean, it's, they say Nubian. It's not like, that's like us saying the other N word. Fairly certain that is a parallel to a certain extent. Like,
I don't know that, like, I don't
they
know
referred
that it's,
they refer maybe. To, and like, if you go back to like the Middle Ages, they call people Moors.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the same from what I've gleaned from history, you know, different history lessons. That's it's a slur to a certain extent.
I've never understood Moor to be a slur.
It's a black person.
It's a specific, like, ethnic group. They were like, the black Muslims that invaded Spain.
Yeah, several like black history teachers have taught me that like that's what you're told, but they use that word to describe any black person.
I would not. No, that does not surprise me because they were too dumb to tell people apart. That was back in the day where they were like, oh, this person looks vaguely like this other person. Clearly they're from this place. It's like, I don't know.
But then he fights like a Beast Wars Transformer.
Yeah, I like that guy.
The Raptor.
Technozoic was his name.
Technozoic.
Yeah. He tears his heart out.
He does.
Oh, sad face.
I'm not that sad.
You're not that sad about
no.
the awesome robot dying?
Nah.
Oh,
if it was Joe Pye, it would be.
I was gonna say, if it was Joe Pye.
Technozoic like, oh. stabbed poor King Peacock in the back the second he had a chance.
They were fighting.
I know, but you could.
He didn't
was trying
betray
to,
him.
He was. They were trying. He was trying to like, if we don't fight, nothing. And then he fights him anyway. It feels like he was. Feels a little betrayal.
He did not have a choice.
Yeah,
none of them did. They were all. It's like Roman gladiators. If they
choice.
Didn't, if the, they had two options,
have you seen
one
the
is
movie
kill
Gladiator,
the other guy,
Eric,
and the
Gladiator,
other one,
Maximus. He appeals to the people. I'm sure they'd side, all these racist people would totally side with a black guy, right?
A black guy and a robot who is like, yeah. Stupid clickers. Good God.
Jesus. What do you think about the art?
You know, I remembered really liking it. I dislike it now looking back on it. And I think 90% of my problem with it is the color.
Really?
It looks, and we're so spoiled by lush, full, rich comic book color. There's no going back. The old stuff, even this old, I mean, this was still digital color and the printing technology was still, it's not like it was, it's terrible. You know, they still had probably like at least good reproduction, if not like the direct like computer to plate printing technology that they use now. So, I mean, they're going to get good quality reproduction, but it's just so boring, so flat color. I'm looking at an old trade. I do not know that these have been recolored, but it falls so flat. It's such technical color without a lot of artistic decisions made to it. I would probably enjoy it a lot more if there was a good colorist to distill this.
What is it the color credited to on your trade?
Probably to no one.
Yeah, this is Wildstorm
FX. Yeah,
that's the same one on mine. I bought it through Comixology.
Yeah. And I think that it's not necessarily like it's awful, 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 but it's very much of that time. Nowadays, you pick up a comic and you expect every panel to be lushly painted by Jordy Belair and her only, obviously. or someone of her ilk.
Her and Matthew Wilson.
Yeah. Modern comics are colored more like paintings. Digital art has come so far that this looks really dated and boring by comparison. And there are some where they're trying to break out and do new things. And by and large, it's very coloring book style coloring. It's not very rich. It's not doing all the work that I expected to do. But, you know, book two, better than book one, but still not what I remembered.
It reminds me somewhat of Sandman.
Yes, exactly.
And that, like you said, it is of its era.
Mm-hmm.
You think any of that is intentional because it is kind of a superhero sort of genre? You know, it's stylistically kind of messing with that? Or if it's,
I think that there's, you know, the heavy shadows, and I imagine I could look for a while and find something Kirby Crackle-esque.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't necessarily know that it's trying to borrow the coloring from that. I certainly hope not, because to me it's ineffective for the most part, though it doesn't improve. To me it just feels like they were not aware that that's something that they could do. I mean, art happens in movements, and modern comic book coloring is sort of as a result of the more painterly style shift that we've had in the past, you know, decade, 15 years. It's all predicated upon that. This was predicated upon, oh, digital color's relatively new and we're all going to do it now and we're going to color it just like we colored old comics. I think that crediting color to an actual person and calling it, you know, calling them an artist, let alone the colorist being on the cover, was like an unheard of thing.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's incredibly important and carries so much of the book.
Well, those last few issues, they do credit Alex Sinclair as the colorists.
Very interesting.
Which, those ones you talk about being better.
Yes. No, it does improve.
And he is credited on 8, it's 9 through 12 is Alex Sinclair doing colors, and he's credited on the cover. Pin that to the ones where it gets better.
Oh, it's clearly better, those last issues. Yeah. Like when you look at the where they're busting the pedophile ring, And like the atmospheric glow of that water. I mean, that's all the colorist that the penciler and inker had nothing to do with that. It's all that. This book is full of examples like that. And it's not to, say that they were just a complete, you know, a complete failure. They did some interesting things like knocking back the line work on Kowalski, Jack Phantom. There's atmospheric perspective on, you know, some city shots of Neapolis, and it's not like it's horrible, you know, but it's just not the level that I've become used to.
No, I like it well enough. It's not, I don't think it's the thing that stands out in this book. It's not like, if you're reading Tom Strong,
mm-hmm.
like the art, you know, is as strong as Alan Moore's writing.
Yes.
In this, it's, you can see that the writing is what is, you know, the strength, and the art is, well, it's good. It tells the story very well, but it certainly does kind of feel a little dated. It's not bad though.
Dated,
it's not like
is really, yeah. Dated is really how I would describe it, because Gene Ha is obviously very talented, and I've got a lot of respect for Xander Cannon as well. It's a really interesting way that they've broken up this division of labor, mm-hmm. because Gene Ha was kind of the name, you know, he was kind mm-hmm. of the famous artist during this time. He did not do the pencils with Xander Cannon, the inks. Xander Cannon did the quote unquote layout. He was the layout artist, and Gene Ha did all this ink work and line work on top of it. That's my understanding, because when Xander Cannon did Smacks by himself, it looks completely different. And when Gene Ha does sketches to design the characters, it looks almost exactly like this, but he did not do the quote unquote pencils. It's, I don't know, it's wacky. And it's confused me ever since I read this, you know, back in like 2004 or something.
Is Joe Pye your favorite character?
Good Lord, that's a tough call. There are a lot of my favorite characters in here. I love Irma and Girl One. I love Jeff Smacks. I like Dust Devil. I like his partner too. God. He's not a likable, he's the lovable racist scamp.
Yeah.
Good Lord. It's easier, I think, to deal with, the fact that he's such a huge racist because it's against an ethnic group that is so far removed from our experience. You know, to be racist against robots is like, he is interesting and nuanced. He's a lot of what people think of as a bad cop. He's not a, you know, a moo-hoo-ha-ha evil villain.
No, he's very much like a very kind of like, well, he's just a dude. He's,
yes.
He's, yeah. They don't make him, he's not cartoonishly evil.
Yes. I like that he's shown as a person with these huge flaws. And I like that they're all basically shown this way, that this world is so strange and the morality of all of it is so murky. Like Caesar Kimlo.
Yeah.
Is a dog and he starts dating a hooker? A human hooker?
Yeah.
That's weird. And yeah. Makes me a little uncomfortable. Well, but that's the kind of morality that this world has.
And I think, to be fair, that it even kind of, it understands that. Mm-hmm. I think into the characters are struggling with that even.
Yeah.
Like they, a lot of this stuff like is strange to them and they don't know mm-hmm. how to deal with it.
And it's just sort of that's the consequences of their world.
Yeah, when there's so much.
Yes. There's so much weird shit going on, and it's just all compounding everything else. It's terribly interesting. So I don't particularly think that, you know, the character that I probably would say that I have the most empathy for, my favorite character maybe what used to be Smax. I don't know that he still is, but I think the character that I have the most empathy for is Captain Trainer and like his relationship with his partner, Wilford Brimley. My God, that man looks just like Wilford Brimley.
He does.
With his partner, who he met during the war when he was a 16-year-old that the government gave a rocket to. And he's like, go sit on this in the sky. He was 16, and a 24-year-old man seduces him. And they stay together. This is set in the 90s. You know?
Yep.
50 yeah. years or something. I don't know. It's like a lot of science fiction. It's the parts about it that are the most human, the least fantastic. It's what rings true. It's more what we, it's more the stories about ourselves, you know, the mm-hmm. human element is what makes it work.
Yeah. You mentioned that he's, you know, his partner is 24 when they meet and he's only 16 and they just have broken this whole pedophile ring of all these superhumans. Mm-hmm. You know, and he has a, you know, a crisis about it a little bit of ethically, like, what's the difference? And I, to be fair, like, both of us live in Florida. If you're 24, it is perfectly legal to date a 16-year-old. Mm-hmm. That is, the age of consent is 16. You can, as long as you're 24 or younger, you can, the age of consent is 16 or higher. So, I'm not, that is legal in the state of Florida, at least. And probably, I think the age is lower in certain other states. Not saying that's good, I'm just saying that's the law.
Just that it is a fact.
Yes. But Joe Pai is my favorite. Even he's only
it's
in two
hard.
Issues,
it's hard. It's hard. No, it's hard not to love Joe Pai. It is challenging to just not just want to hug him.
Yeah, he's a great character and really smart. I really wish he was in. There was more of him. And there's a lot more story to tell in this. There's a lot of stuff they don't. Is they ever mm-hmm. address what the rumor really is in any of those ancillary books?
No, I think this just sort of. I don't know if Alan Moore, I'd say he lost interest in it. I know Gene Ha tried to write this. I'm trying to think when it was. Something like 2008. I'm just guessing. I don't remember what the new launch of it was, but it was a monthly book and I was buying them and then it stopped coming out and I believe that was it. He just couldn't keep up with it. So, yeah.
I don't know. I'm like, as good as this is, I really feel like it's not a complete thing.
No, it unfortunately is not, but this is, these books are kind of all there is. I mean, it's a wonderful world. He just got more interested in doing, you know, your Tom Strong, your Promethea. Various other things. Writing a novel with 1 million words in it.
Which, yeah, that's obviously very important that there's a, you know, a novel that is heavy enough to, like, serve as a car.
Mm-hmm.
You just put wheels on it.
It has not been released yet because they haven't harvested enough trees to print it.
Yeah, it would actually destroy, it would deforest the entire world. So yeah. It's a digital-only novel.
So Alan Moore is clearly destroying the environment.
It's a game he's playing. Oh, yeah, save the environment. But I'm going to kill all these trees.
Fuck trees, man. What did trees ever do to you, Alan Moore?
I know.
Jesus Christ.
So anything else you want to touch on top 10?
I feel like we've barely said anything about this, and we're almost at 2 hours.
It's a lot of stuff that happens in this. It's a good comic. It's
crazy.
It is
an excellent comic, and I'm glad to hear that you've enjoyed it so much. You seem to think that it was too harsh that the Justice League turned out to be pedophiles. I thought, I know I have not really formulated a different opinion, but I do remember thinking that it was an interesting twist, you know, that sort of like as you grow older, you see like sort of the dark truth behind things. And that's sort of how this felt to me. You know, that you're seeing, like, Alan Moore is revealing the quote-unquote dark truth, you know, in this sort of murky reality and making these sort of cartoon heroes evil and flawed when they try and present as one thing or another, you know, try and just, but you seem to have reservations about it. Why don't you tell me about that?
I don't know. Just
you said it was very harsh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we often, not always, but often come down on comic books like DC's in particular, where it's mm-hmm. like, here's grim, gritty darkness for no particular reason. And sure, and certainly this has much more nuance than the ones we typically criticize.
Yeah.
But, and people often criticize Garth Ennis for doing this, the same yes. thing, where he takes superheroes and then makes them look ridiculous by having them be like deviant monsters.
Right. And this is, you could draw a direct parallel from this to The Boys, which is basically this exact story, except not done as well, with a lot of wacky conspiracy theories thrown in. And a lot of just really gross shit for the sake of being really gross. I mean, he literally said, I'm going to try and out-preacher. They said when he was writing it. I mean, I have nothing against Garth Ennis and I actually enjoy The Boys, but this is more successful at what Garth Ennis, the sort of kernel behind what he was trying to do.
And I don't know. It just felt much in the same vein of that. I don't really care about superhero stories that have superheroes as pedophiles. Like, that's not what I want.
Right. This has a lighter touch than a lot of things. And I don't think it needs to be done anymore. It's been done once here. I don't think it needs to happen again. I mean, I agree with you. I don't want to see it again. But I think it works here. You think it does not?
No, it works. It doesn't feel, after that, like that moment where they, Synesthesia figures out that the, whatever her title is, what is she?
Ultima.
Yes, that she is the one who is the actual murderer, that mm-hmm. and she's behind all that. And there's this gigantic scene where Girl One is killed, and mm-hmm. Smax is like trying to throwing everything he has at her and just coming up short. And they're trying to figure out a way to stop this almost all powerful person. Ending the book with. Analogs of your, like, of superheroes that are here they are, they're pedophiles, they're disgusting. It just doesn't live up to the same thing. Like, the only bit of it, like Joe Pye, his scenes in that are what made it really interesting to me. But otherwise, I didn't really find it that great. Like, I didn't feel like that. It certainly wasn't the focus of most of these books. Like, the mm-hmm. focus was mostly on that murder mystery and the murder and that alien, the Virga killer.
The Libra killer.
Libra. I'm thinking Virgo. Libra killer. Like, that seems to be, that was mostly the focus. And after they introduce Joe Pye, and then suddenly, in two issues, they tell the story of a pedophile ring involving these characters we've already seen. I mean, it's not bad, certainly. It does have, like I mentioned, it does have depth and nuance. I just think that...
I mean, it's not like it's been tied in really from the beginning. Because, I mean, like, the sidekick character who committed suicide in the first book.
Right.
Was involved. Boots Wesson ended up being involved. I mean, it's not as if it's just tacked on, which it almost feels like what you're saying.
I don't know. It doesn't feel like it's suddenly just, ta-da, this is what this all means. And I'm just like, I don't, up until that point, it's never, I don't know, made as clear as I want it to be. When suddenly, when it's, like, that's a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, basically making the Justice League a pedophile ring is nothing that can go, look, this is all this stuff means, and why didn't you tie it? I don't know. I felt like it.
To me, I just think that it needs this big dramatic climax of this police raid to tie up the narrative. I mean, the whole fight against Ultima was basically an accident that sets all this off. I think it really needs that to feel satisfying to me, but you feel like it should have ended just after Ultima.
I hesitate to say that because then I don't get Joe Pye.
You think that Joe Pye should swoop in and kill Ultima, and then then you and him are going to get married.
Yeah.
And go to a land made of cats.
Can Galactus Cat be there?
Yes.
Okay, good.
He's the one that makes the land of cats.
I'm on board with this.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that it's probably my least favorite part.
I think you often take issue when the heroes don't act like heroes.
Well, yeah.
That's a criticism that, certainly that you made about Axis.
Yes.
Or rather the inversion. And there's other times where I'm not even sure, but it has come up before.
No, I think that, I agree. No, I'm full on board with that. Yes, I like it when heroes act like heroes generally. There are, Axis is much, much worse comic book than this. I don't want to try and conflate that this book is even, Axis is a very not good comic, and this is a very good comic. So, I don't like it when heroes don't act like heroes.
You know what I like? I like how Smax always eats a giant pile of hamburgers.
He does. He's a very large man. He has to eat a lot of food.
Imagine he does.
He's a big dude.
He's like a pile of like 7 or 8 hamburgers, just in a stack. That's so good.
I love it when he finally decides to eat with everyone. Everyone's like, whoa, hey, buddy. Hanging out with us now, eh? There should be more of this. I really wish there was. But, you know, Alan Moore, the whims of the original artist.
Yep.
I'm bored by this tremendously exciting comic book. I want to write something else.
Yeah, well, to be fair, it's not like he went off and wrote shit.
No, he went and wrote... We need to do Promethea eventually. And
I have never read Promethea.
Me neither.
Unless you said Prometheus, and I'm like, I don't really care about that movie.
Well, there's a comic book about it now.
Yeah, we read an issue, didn't we? Sort of.
Sort of. It didn't make any sense.
No, we read Alien versus Predator versus Prometheus versus
Blood and Fire.
Space.
Yeah, there's guys. Hey, there's Predators hanging out.
Yep. Hey. I guess that's happening now. Okay, back to the story.
I guess there's Predators everywhere. No, Top Ten's a very good comic book. I definitely recommend this to most.
Yes. It's a double buy on Joe Pye.
So, wrapping up Top 10 next week, Wonton Soup by The Stoko.
The Stoko.
James Stoko.
It's completely random who we're giving these articles to.
I think Stoko is... I like The Stoko.
I don't dislike it. Just like The Stoko, The Kirkman.
It feels appropriate. Whenever it feels appropriate.
Just feel it out.
That's how it works, right? I think that'll wrap us up for the week. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. Find all of our episodes there, plus a lot of other good stuff. Check us out at the website. You can find us, of course, on iTunes, Stitcher, pretty much every other podcatcher pretty much takes from iTunes. So you can find us at those places. If you like us, please review, rate, subscribe. It really helps us out, gets us new listeners. Really like it. Tell your friends. You can also find us on Twitter at HBC Hour. Email us, handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. Yeah, we'd like to hear from you guys, so please let us know what you think about the podcast, about what we're reading, about anything in general. Really like to hear from you. You can find me online at Twitter. It's at MixmasterCereal. It's MixmasterCereal. Eric, where can they find you online?
You can see my portfolio by going to freewillunlimited.com. And you can see most of the things I get up to online, including my Tumblr and my Pinterest, by going to ericzgoodnight.com. You can also tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R. Bad Example.
So with that, folks, we will call it a day. Have a good one.
Rock and roll.